Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer, and this is Double Coverage, a production of the Daily Journal. We're going to be talking Mississippi State and Ole Miss for the next half hour or so. We're glad you've chosen to click in with us today. Logan, how are you, man?
Doing good, doing good. Fisting to start this second half of the season, get that going and knock out these last six regular season games and really figure out a lot about this Mississippi State team that I cover. I mean, it's crazy to think at the midway point, I'm still learning about this team.
You know, it just takes time, Logan. It takes a few games. Sometimes it takes half a season to really figure out what you have on your hands, not just for Mississippi State, any team. You know, I'm thinking of Vanderbilt right now, Ole Miss coming off a much-needed SEC win, getting a 57-35 victory at home against Vanderbilt last week. And, look, Vanderbilt we thought was a pretty good team at the beginning of the year. It was a team on the cusp of the top 25. But it just takes several games to really see what's there, to see what's under the hood. And you look at Vanderbilt, I know we talked about this a little bit last week. You know, they start out with a fairly tough regional rivalry for them, a game for them. Middle Tennessee is usually a difficult game for them, you know, because of the intensity involved there. You come back, you play the SWAC in week two. It's Alabama A&M. There's really nothing you can learn from that game. And then they beat a pretty good Kansas State team, and all of a sudden, you know, this is a Vanderbilt team that's 3-0 with confidence. And as I said last week, somebody has the audacity to say, we want Alabama. Well, you know, they got Alabama. It just takes time to start to learn about these teams. But, hey, we're there, man. We're in the midway point of the season. Be on the downside after this week. Hey, folks, before we get into the show too deep, I want to remind you about some other podcast to check out. Be sure to look for The Memo, our news podcast with the Daily Journal, all things Northeast Mississippi. That comes to you every Wednesday and Friday with Chris Kiefer and Derek Russell. And be sure to check out Prep Rally for all your high school sports needs. That comes to you every Wednesday with Dalton Middleton and Brad Locke. And of course, Logan and I are here with you every week for Double Coverage. Mississippi State, where are the Bulldogs this week, Logan?
They're at homecoming against Kentucky. So it's actually a pretty big ball game coming in with the State and Kentucky have had some pretty good battles over the last few years. And, I'm really expecting another one this weekend. And what I meant by, learning about this team right now is I'm still trying to figure out, maybe how this team handles a close ball game. I mean, last week's 35-10 win over BYU is as close as Mississippi State has played anybody this year. I mean, you're talking about a 25-point win or just a 25-point game. Every game State's played in has either been a blowout one way or the other. So, I don't really know how this team is going to handle a close game. They didn't handle close games very well last year. I think they only won one tight ball game. They lost most of those ball games last year at the very end. It was a tight ball game, and the Kentucky game was one of those. I mean, you go up to Lexington last year. Of course, Mississippi State's defense was awful all of last year and, gave up 554 yards to Kentucky, but it was still a back-and-forth ball game. Mississippi State scores to go ahead with 1:09 left to go in that ball game. You think Mississippi State's got the game in the bag. They kick off and Kentucky doesn't get all that great a field percentage or field position on the kickoff, but next thing you know, they're marching right down the field to set up a field goal. And Austin McGinnis comes on and kicks a career-long 51-yard field goal as time expires, and Kentucky wins that game 40-38. And, it's just one of those situations where State's defense just couldn't stop anybody. The offense did fairly well that game. Move the ball downfield, did exactly what they wanted to do, but I guess it's kind of like the Cowboys a couple of weeks ago against the Packers. They just scored too early. They scored that go-ahead touchdown too early and, left too much time on the clock. And, when you've got a bad defense like Mississippi State had last year, like the Cowboys appear to have this year, you just can't give that an offense that much time to go score on your bad defense.
You know what? You mentioned the close games there. It seems like every time I look up, Kentucky's in a close game, and they've handled it. They've handled it well. They're 5-1. They weren't able to pull it out against Florida, but you know, you don't really need a close game against Eastern Michigan. You know, and there have been some other teams. You know, they weren't able to put away Missouri until very late in the game. So, you know, Kentucky's 5-1. They just, to me, look like an unimpressive 5-1. I'm interested to see, you know, what State does against Kentucky. I know Ole Miss has the road trip there to Lexington the first weekend in November. The Rebels, like I said earlier, coming off a win against Vanderbilt, they just needed a win. It was a good time to have Vanderbilt on the schedule. And look, it was a good time to play a team that just isn't as strong as some that they had faced in recent weeks. And we saw this Ole Miss team basically deliver the recipe for success that we knew this team was going to have to be successful. The Rebels were balanced and explosive on offense, and they were good enough on defense. It's hard to really praise the defense for giving up 35 points, but look, they were opportunistic. They sacked Kyle Shurmur 7 times, and the times that they didn't sack Kyle Shurmur, they got back there and disrupted him. They hit him legally, and they roughed him up. It was an impressive display of pass rushing against a Vanderbilt team that went into the league, Logan, ranked number one in the SEC in pass protection with the fewest sacks allowed per game. That changed after the Ole Miss game. So a good job by the Rebels of getting back there and disrupting Shurmur, forcing some turnovers, giving their offense a short field. Again, things we had not seen from the Ole Miss defense. One thing that we did see that we have seen this year is a team get a lot of rushing yards. Now, the 188 yards by Vanderbilt were the second lowest rushing yards allowed by Ole Miss this season, and certainly the lowest in SEC play. They had given up over 300 to both Alabama and Auburn. So, you know, a little bit of improvement there, but Vanderbilt had not been running the ball well, even with Ralph Webb in his senior year, the number 15 all-time rusher in the SEC. Nobody on the Vanderbilt team before last week had gained more than 64 yards in a game. Ralph Webb comes out, does Ralph Webb things, gets 163 yards and 2 touchdowns. So what we saw from this Ole Miss defense against the run was that they could be good for 2 plays, 3 plays, 4 plays maybe, but as long as Vanderbilt was patient and kept giving the ball to Webb, it was going to break a run. And there were 4 runs in the game of over 20 yards, 3 of over 30 yards, and 1 of over 40 yards. So Vanderbilt did pick up big plays in the run game. And certainly that's the big point of focus for Ole Miss going into the LSU game this week. Darius Geis, he has not had the season that he'd like to have, much like Ralph Webb, okay? But Geis showed some flashes last week against Auburn. And look, Ole Miss players know from experience that he is a strong, shifty, slippery back when you get him. Difficult to tackle one-on-one, and this is not a good tackling Ole Miss team. They're going to have to win some one-on-one tackles, but the real plan is going to be get people to the ball, help your teammates, gang tackle. Again, this means the Rebels are going to have to be consistent with alignment and assignment. Can't have those busts, have to fit the run gaps, not things we've seen the Rebels do consistently. So it's going to be a difficult matchup for them with Darius Geis. And the other thing, Logan, and you saw this LSU offense against Mississippi State, didn't see it have much success, but the Tigers have kind of righted the ship a little bit since that loss at Mississippi State and the loss at home to Troy. They've bounced back with a win at Florida and then an impressive win last week against Auburn, rallying from a 20-point deficit. One thing they do on offense is there's a lot of movement, a lot of motion, and that can be problematic for a team like Ole Miss that hasn't been one to fit the gaps well or play the assignments well. They haven't been consistent like that. So if they look up and start following these LSU receivers in motion, they could be out of position, and that's going to contribute to a long play in the run game. What were your impressions, Logan? I know State won the game 37-7, but what were your thoughts of LSU's offense and Darius Geis?
Yeah, I was expecting more from Geis. I mean, going into the year, I thought he was probably the best SEC running back coming into the season. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, you hadn't seen a whole lot of him this year. But, in LSU's offense, they did do a lot of pre-snap motions, shifting multiple tight ends across the line, starting them out on the left and shifting them to the right or vice versa, or sending a slot receiver across, the back behind the line and line up on the other side of the field. So there's a lot of pre-snap reads and a lot of pre-snap motion that a defense has to read. And, if you're not ready for that, if you're not prepared for it, then, they can catch you by surprise. But, Mississippi State did a really good job defensively against LSU. They didn't fall for any of those reads and stuff. And that's something that I saw Mississippi State do later in the season. They got caught on a lot of trick plays in that Auburn game and that Georgia game. They did a lot of stuff unorthodox that got Mississippi State secondary vulnerable and in position to give up some big plays. But Mississippi State against a base offense has been pretty good this year, and that's really outside all the shifts and all the motions, that's exactly what LSU is. I mean, they don't do anything just too fancy. They just kind of run that pro style, come right at you type of offense, and Mississippi State was ready for it that day.
What do you think? How does State match up with Kentucky? What do they take from the first half of the season? Where do they need to improve?
Well, I think State needs to, obviously they've got to be ready for the trick plays. They've been very good against a base offense, and they've got to be prepared for Benny Snell. Benny Snell was a guy last year that did really well against Mississippi State. He rushed for somewhat north of. He rushed for 128 yards, and Boom Williams rushed for 99 yards. So they gave up a lot of yards on the ground to Kentucky last year, but they gave up a lot of yards through the air too. So they were kind of balanced at being bad on both regards on defense last year. But, as we've seen this year under Todd Grantham, Mississippi State's defense has been, for the most part, pretty good. And you look at Louisville's struggles this year, and they've all been a result of the defense. You've got a Heisman Trophy winner playing quarterback over there. And then Peter Sermon's defense at Louisville is giving up a whole lot of yards and losing them a lot of games. And, I've seen a lot of stuff from Louisville's camp, a lot of the same stuff that I heard from Mississippi State's camp last year, about Peter Sermon. But, Todd Grantham's done a good job for State. I think he's been a shot in the arm for that defense. They played well against them. But, offensively, you need to see some cleaner execution. That's the thing that – I would have liked to seen a lot more of in that BYU game last week from Mississippi State. Mississippi State ends up with 546 yards and 35 first downs, which is the most, that Dan Mullen's ever had. But still, it wasn't that clean of a ball game. You had two interceptions by Nick Fitzgerald. Both of those came around the red zone. One of them was inside the red zone. He left the pass high to Aris Williams at the goal line. If he hits him in the numbers with it, it's a touchdown, but he leaves it high, hits off his hands, and it's intercepted in the end zone. Nick Fitzgerald's second interception, he drops back and tries to throw off his back foot, tries to muscle it over to the sideline to his tight end, and, just makes a bad read, bad decision, with that ball, and it's picked off. And I think that's the one that BYU ends up scoring its touchdown on. So, it's just made a couple of bad decisions, had a fumble on a kickoff right after BYU's only touchdown. And, so three turnovers in that ball game, but at the end of the day, Mississippi State still won by 25. They rolled up 500-something yards of offense, 35 first downs. But, the offense could have been so much better than what it was. So they need to execute against Kentucky because, at the same time, Kentucky's a pretty good ball club coming in at 5-1. And they're used to being in those tight ball games. And Mississippi State has not been in one yet. So I don't really know how this team's going to react in that situation.
Well, the LSU game for Ole Miss, obviously this is a traditional rival game, huge game back in the 50s and 60s. Logan, you look up, and so many times both of these teams, or at least one of them, was ranked in the top 10 when this rivalry really grew. It's the heyday, and so many older folks really remember those games, and this is a very special rivalry from that regard, but it's changed through the years, and the Ole Miss and Mississippi State rivalry, you know, took off, really, really grew, you know, in the 70s, I believe, was when it really just kind of jumped up there. And LSU has never had to deal with an in-state rivalry. And the real rival for LSU has kind of been like a moving target. You know, they had Tulane back in the day, but, you know, that's been a long time ago that those two teams have played, and even longer that it mattered very much. And LSU right now would probably say that its rival is Alabama. But this game and this series still means a lot to a lot of people. And you could see how much it meant to LSU in 2014 when the students rushed the field in Baton Rouge after the Tigers defeated then number three Ole Miss. The home team's won the last five games. The Rebels have won three of the last four at Vaught-Hemingway Stadium. They're going to have a tough time pulling off the win this week. I really thought that the Tigers, Logan, could come in a little bit distracted after they lost to Troy, but they've righted the ship since then and have played well, and that's a credit to their coach, Ed Ogeron, the former Ole Miss coach. And, of course, you know, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, Ed coming back to Oxford as a head coach. He's been to Oxford twice as an assistant and is 0-2. He lost with Tennessee against Ole Miss in 2009 when Dexter McCluster rushed for almost 300 yards. And then he lost with LSU in 2015 when Ole Miss just kind of dominated that game, won 38-23. And LSU turned the tables and really dominated the Rebels last year in Baton Rouge. So Ed comes back as the head coach. He mostly said the right things this week, Logan. He was rather mundane in most of his comments, but he did, you know, mention one that, you know, got a lot of Twitter reaction, a lot of retweets, and got people talking when he said the whole time that he was at Ole Miss, he wished he was at LSU. Does that surprise anybody? I mean, this is a South Louisiana man, a deep South Cajun that he would want to be at LSU. I mean, yeah, I didn't really think that was that big of a comment. Every coach has his dream job, or every coach has that place that he would like to be. And usually that coach is not there in his first head coaching job. And that's what Ed Ogeron was at Ole Miss. He was in his first head coaching job. I thought the rest of his comments this week have been, you know, totally within the lines. He's had praise for Ole Miss players, praise for the recruiting that Hugh Freeze has done in the program, and now that the job that Matt Luke is doing as interim coach, you know, he said all the right things there. He even was very complimentary, Logan, of chicken on a stick at the Chevron there on the corner by the square. I bet you have. I was going to ask you about that. Although he referred to it as the Exxon. So I don't know that he did the Chevron very many favors, but I think most people around there can figure it out there with the chicken on a stick. I'm wondering if he's going to have a lot of white boxes for his players after the game with chicken on a stick there, you know, from the station down the street. We'll see. So Ed coming back, making his return to Oxford. He's really downplayed it, has said throughout the week, this is not about him, it's about his team. And, you know, and look, that's a long time ago now. None of these players, it's been a long time since Ole Miss has had players that played for Ed Ogeron. You know, I think one of the neat story angles about this week has been Matt Luke coaching against LSU, Logan, because it is a big rivalry for Ole Miss. It is an important series. And Matt Luke, having grown up in an Ole Miss family, his father having played, his brother, and this is going to be Matt Luke's 15th LSU game, 15th Ole Miss LSU game as either a player, assistant coach, or now head coach. And I think that's kind of neat. You know, and he spent some time this week talking to the players, you know, about this game and this series. And you know, and it's a night game, and while I really don't like that for deadline, I'm excited about the 11 a.m. kick for Arkansas next week. You know, that will add to the excitement a little bit, so, you know, we'll see what happens. Hey, let's shift gears a little bit, folks. Let's talk some basketball. Media Day in Nashville this week for the SEC. The media poll came out. Mississippi State projected number 12, Ole Miss number 10. As far as the Rebels, typically they finish several spots higher than what the media poll projects them. And Andy Kennedy even laughed about that a little bit last week, saying, you know, someone mentioned high expectations for Ole Miss basketball this season. And personally, I have some high expectations for them, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But Kennedy kind of blew off the question and said, well, I haven't heard that there are high expectations for us. You know, everything I see seems to be like there's Kentucky and, you know, and then there's Florida and the Rebels are down there somewhere and, you know, in the mix. And, you know, and that's usually the way it is. And that was how the media poll came out. But, you know, I like this Ole Miss team. I would like it better if two of its three-person high school signing class had come to campus, but two highly rated prospects did not. After the Rebels signed grad transfer Markel Crawford of Memphis, I know that was a factor there, but I think also a factor was assistant coach Bill Armstrong leaving. Well, you know, you had two of the recruits ask for their release after signing day, and they were granted that release. Even still, I like what this team is putting together. They're going to have to replace Sebastian Saiz in the middle, and it's going to be a different look there with Dominik Olenacek, and I'm sure I've butchered that name. I'll get better at it as the season goes along, but we'll just call him Dom, a 7-foot transfer from Drake, about 265 pounds, so a big guy there. He's not going to be as athletic as Saiz was. He's not going to be that kind of scorer. He's not going to jump out and shoot a three-pointer or anything like that, but it does look like he can be a rim protector, block some shots, and we'll see how he is rebounding. But this is going to be a guard-oriented team. I mentioned Crawford, the transfer from Memphis, grad transfer. They got him for 1 year, so he needs to be good early. But 6'4", very athletic, kind of did it all for Memphis last year, averaged about 12.5 a game. Did some rebounding, got some steals, very athletic player. So that's going to be a big lift for Ole Miss there. What this team really wants to see is more scoring from its four spot, the power forward spot. And they think they're going to get that from Bruce Stevens, a junior college All-American, a transfer from Jones, 6'8", a very athletic player that Andy Kennedy says can step outside and score from the perimeter as well. So he's really expecting Stevens to help with the scoring in that spot. And the Rebels return three very solid, productive guards from last year in DeAndre Burnett, now a senior, the former Miami player, Terrence Davis, who turned out to be one of the most exciting players in the league last year, so very good in the open floor, and also Brian Tyree at point guard. And I think it's going to be good for this team to go into the season pretty much settled at point guard with a guy with some experience and athleticism. So, you know, while Andy Kennedy says maybe there aren't high expectations for this team, I think there are some reasons to think they could take a step forward. We'll see. Tell us about the Bulldogs.
Well, I'm kind of like you, Paris. I would have liked them a lot better if they would have had everybody together. State's only got 11 scholarship players on their team right now. And, you know, if they would have had Garrison Brooks, a four-star player out of Auburn that they signed that ended up asking for his release and transfer and ended up signing in North Carolina. And then Mario Kegler, who left Mississippi State's team, he was the third leading scorer last year, leaves to transfer to Baylor. So if they would have had all of the, you know, their scholarship players, I would have liked them a little bit better. But, you know, I think there's, you mentioned Mississippi State being at 12, you know, and I think people are kind of cautiously optimistic about Mississippi State. They know there's some talent there on the roster, but they really just haven't seen it. I mean, last year, Mississippi State was the youngest team in the nation. Out of all the 200 or 300 teams in the country, Mississippi State was the youngest. And, they played well. They had some close ball games, but, you know, didn't finish a lot of those games out. But, you know, played with some of the top teams in the country right down to the wire. And I think that was promising for Mississippi State for their future. You look at this team, you know, there are 11 scholarship players, no seniors on the roster. So, you know, it's still a very young team, but a very talented team. You know, obviously Quindary Weatherspoon is back and he's going into his junior year and, you know, they're expecting more big things out of him this year. Obviously he dealt with the wrist injury last year and still scored 16.5 points a game. And, you know, got his little brother in the backcourt this year, a 5-star freshman, Nick Weatherspoon. And he's supposed to, you know, back up Lamar Peters, who had an incredible summer at the Adidas Nation. Some of those draft projections have Lamar Peters as a lottery pick right now. So that's coming a long way for Mississippi State. And if you've got that type of talent at point guard, that could take Mississippi State a long way. I'm still interested to see how State's bigs do this year. Obviously, the last couple of years, they've been undersized there. Eric Coleman's had to play a lot at the five. He's a natural four player, and you know he's going to get to play the four this year if they can keep everybody else healthy inside. Abdul Ledoux, who was ineligible last year, is going to be able to play this year. He's 6'11", 250 pounds. You know, a big guy, big strong guy, and he really helped State a lot. You know, on the practice floor last year, but that's not helping him win that many games out on the actual game floor, and he's going to be available this year, and that's going to help them out a lot, just having, you know, a big guy inside where they can move Eric Holman more out to his natural position at 6'10", and, you know, a guy with his athletic ability and that size out there at the four is going to help. Xavien Stapleton, you know, I got to see him a little bit last week during the slam dunk contest at the Maroon Madness. He won the slam dunk contest for the second year in a row. The guy is just so athletic and, you know, 6'6", 210 pounds. He's a guy that transferred from Louisiana Tech to Mississippi State after and had a couple of knee injuries along the way. But, you know, I just don't understand how Rick Ray doesn't recruit him out of Madison Central. You know, he ends up at Louisiana Tech and, you know, when Ben Howland gets here, he transfers back to his home state. And I don't know how you let a player like that, you know, how you miss on a player like that, you know, in the state. It's not like he was bringing in just a whole lot of recruiting talent, you know, with that group. But Ben Howland's obviously changed that. You know, there's really, I guess you could say Quindary Weatherspoon is a Rick Ray guy because Rick Ray actually signed him. But that's the only remnants of Rick Ray still left on this team. You know, everything else has Ben Howland made. And, you know, of course, Quindary Weatherspoon only played for Ben Howland. So I think this is a very good club. And I'm actually going to get to see him, Parrish, Sunday, having a big a last-minute exhibition game against Nebraska coming up this Sunday at 1 o'clock. It's a charity thing. They had to get a special waiver from the NCAA to actually play that game. They're going to have two exhibition games. All the proceeds from this game, it's free to get into the game, but they're going to take monetary donations at the door for Hurricane Irma relief. You know, there's people that are affected by that, and yeah, they're going to try to raise some money in that regard, but playing a pretty good ball club, Power Five team in Nebraska. So it should be a good experience to get to go out and kind of get a preview of what Mississippi State's going to be like this year.
Folks, that's it for this edition of Double Coverage. We thank you for clicking in with us today. Be sure to check out The Memo, our news podcast, every Wednesday and Friday with Chris Kiefer and Derek Russell. And check out Prep Rally for all your high school sports needs every Wednesday with Brad Locke and Dalton Middleton. And Logan and I will be back here with you next week for another edition of Double Coverage.